Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Alfonso Jackson, HUD Secretary, has, through a spokesperson, made an attempt to retract his earlier statements of keeping opponents of Bush from being awarded HUD contracts. Dusty Tucker, a spokeswoman for Jackson, told the Dallas Business Journal Tuesday that Jackson's comments at his April 28th speech were purely, quote, anecdotal. She said, quote, he was merely trying to explain to the audience how people in D.C. will say critical things about the secretary, will unfairly characterize the president, and then turn around and ask you for money. He did not actually meet with someone and turn down a contract. He's not part of the contracting process, unquote. The White House released visitation records of Jack Abramoff today. The official record lists only two visits during the last 6 years, contradicting the memory of Abramoff himself, who claims to have visited Bush dozens of times. 99 tons of AK-47s bound for Iraq's security forces from U.S.-controlled warehouses in Bosnia have disappeared. The four planes bound for Iraq never arrived at their destination. The arms deal was sanctioned by the U.S. Department of Defense, though was carried out by a network of small arms dealers. To add insult to injury, the airline that carried the arms was cited by the U.N. recently for delivering arms to Liberia, fueling the violence there. The disappearance of 200,000 AK-47s further highlights the out-of-control arms trade that has escalated in the years following the invasion of Iraq. George Bush's itinerary was found yesterday in Florida in the trash. The itinerary outlined who would be on Air Force One, where the entourage would be days in advance, and who was carrying the nuclear codes. The man who found the itinerary was a sanitation worker who was very surprised to find a document such as this in the trash. The White House says the papers should have been burned. Comair has asked a bankruptcy judge to reconsider his decision last month to let stand its contract with its flight attendants union. In its filings, the regional airline said Judge Adelaide Harding's April 26th order overlooked facts and included legal errors. Comair, a subsidiary of the bankrupt Delta Airlines, says cuts in flight attendant salaries are vital to the regional airline's restructuring. Harden ruled against Comair 2 weeks ago, saying the cuts it sought were deeper than from other workers and that it hadn't bargained in good faith.
This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral. She would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
The Voting Rights Act and its protections for minority voters may no longer be necessary in parts of the South and Alabama, but Congress should consider expanding it to northern cities and states, Senator Jeff Sessions said Tuesday. The Civil Rights-era law is up for renewal this year, and a group of leading Republicans and Democrats are actively supporting its extension. Sessions is not among them and instead is advising caution because parts of the law have become burdensome and irrelevant, he said. Quote, we don't want to fight over this. Alabama is proud of its accomplishments, but we have the right to ask why other areas of the country are not covered by it, unquote. Ratcheting up incidental reports related to Iran, the U.S. Army is now claiming that the Lynx helicopter shot down over central Basra at the weekend was most probably hit by a surface-to-air missile obtained possibly from neighboring Iran, after missile casings were discovered on the third floor of a nearby building, security sources in the city said yesterday. A military observation post had also reported seeing an unusual level of activity in the building during the previous 2 days. The missile is understood to have been identified as a Russian-made weapon that can be packed into a golf bag and quickly assembled and fired by one person with minimal training. No one from Iran has claimed responsibility for the attack. A second letter sent to the U.S. from Iran is said to have been written by an aide to Iran's Islamic leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. In the two-page letter, Hassan Rouhani defends Iran's resolution to acquire nuclear know-how, but makes an offer that the issue be taken off the U.N. Security Council and be dealt with by the IAEA. Rouhani wrote that Iran would consider ratifying the additional protocol, which provides for intrusive and snap inspections, and that it would also address the question of preventing breakout. Nuclear experts consulted said the letter offers hopeful signs that Iran may be willing to resolve the dispute over its nuclear activities. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, good day. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, of course, it is Wednesday. We all know what that means. Wednesday on Head On, every Wednesday, is prayer meeting night. When we take a look, first and foremost, regardless of what's going on in the wide, wide world, we take a look at the wild, weird little world of religious fundamentalism in the United States.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
And I assure you, we are going to do that. However, sometimes I'm a little bit prophetic. You know, they
in
say there's some
Vietnam seemed like just
or something that
war,
rolled through various sundry corners of my family. One of my great uncles was a witch doctor, literally. He witched for wells and healed sick animals and things like that. In the 19th century, there in the hills and hollers of beautiful, wild, wonderful West Virginia. And I guess it comes to, you know, so we had this little disagreement, dust up, what have you, last night when I said, you know, you're either with the Klan or you're against them. And I open up the paper, the local paper today. Once upon a time, it was the Florence Times Tri-Cities Daily, and that morphed logically into the Tricycle Daily. Now it's just the Times Daily. I guess they caught on to our little joke. The only editorial by the editorial staff of the Times Daily. Headline, Look Who's Back. The issue. The Ku Klux Klan staged a rally Saturday in Russellville to protest illegal immigrants. Okay. Now, it's a full columner. You gotta go down, a good ways to where the Tri-Cities Daily, the Times Daily, whatever the hell, says, quote, but it must be made clear that the Klan does not represent the views of the overwhelming majority of Northwest Alabama residents, though many may agree that the porous southern border poses a number of threats to the country. Very few would take the Klan's position on any given topic. There's only one problem, and it is unstated in this editorial, but, you know, if you read the whole thing, there's only one problem. A lot of people did take the Klan's stand. And they do it all the time. And, you know, you get a choice. Be with the Klan, don't be with the Klan. Pick it. It's that simple. Now, fun with... we'll move on from that. But, you know, look, there I was. Right again. Prayer meeting night. Now, most of this comes from, the various and sundry press organs, he said organ, of the weirdo religious right. Headline, Southern Baptist Seminary appoints creationist to head Center for Theology and Science. Now, what in heaven's name the Southern Baptist the Southern Baptist Con has with a center for science, I'll never know. Because they don't like science, they don't care about science. The only time they're ever even remotely engaged in science is when a couple of doctors have to pump off 20 or 30 gallons of fat-laden goo from Jerry Falwell to keep his sorry carcass alive. Now, get this. A young Earth creationist will be replacing a leading intelligent design proponent as director of the Center for Theology and Science at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Boy, wouldn't you love to take biology class there? That's not a tadpole turning into a frog dadgummit. Tadpoles and frogs are separate critters. The tadpole disappears and is replaced by a frog, by a miracle of Christ Jesus. The new center will be led by Dr. Kurt Wise, who recently directed the Center for Origins Research at Bryan College, a school located in Dayton, Tennessee, home of the famous Scopes monkey trial in 1925. All the report here says the famous Scopes evolution trial. The new director for the Center of Theology and Science at SBTS says he intends to take a different approach than that of his predecessor, leading intelligent design theorist William Dembski. D-E-M-B-S-K-I, and I'm just going to be nice tonight and leave it alone. While Dembski was an outspoken participant in the debate between the religious and secular scientific communities over evolution and a vocal promoter of ID, intelligent design, in opposition to mainstream Darwinist theories, you know, science, Wise says he hopes to focus more on the, quote, focus more on the Christian world and how Christians should respond to the entire issue of origins. Because Christians would respond to science differently than other human beings because they're somehow genetically made up differently, I suppose. Go figure. As a creationist who holds a master's degree and a doctorate in paleontology, Wise contends, you know, where did he get the draw spunky school of paleontology? Look, Melva, I sent in my draw spunky the dinosaur matchbook thingy, and I got me a Ph.D. in poop dinosaurs and stuff. No, this says here that the darn fools at Harvard gave him a doctoral degree in paleontology. Go figure. I don't know, I guess Harvard's slipping a little bit. Public schools today need far more than the introduction of ID or creation science into their curricula, the theology and science scholar suggests. I think we need to change all of science education, he says. We need to teach what science really is. It's magic. It's magic. Science is what witches do science. That's what they do when they're out in the woods dancing around that cauldron, you know, with the little warts on the end of their nose and their all little pointy chins with the hair and the moles and the hair and the pointy hats, naked. They're doing science. Doing science. Wise asserts science is not a product and should never have come to be understood as being the answers. No, science should not be viewed as the answers, especially in light of the fact that the word science comes from scientia, Latin, which means, you know, knowledge. Should never come to be understood as being the answers. Quote, science is the way we find the answers to the questions people are asking. It's a process. You know, but the problem is he's affiliated with people who are asking questions like, why did Satan put the dinosaurs in the paleontological record? Well, the answer is that he did it to confuse the unbelievers. Yea, verily. Give me an amen. And until science is taught that way in the classroom as a process rather than a finite product. What the hell is this babbleous garbage? The Christian paleontologist adds, that just makes my tiny little mind hurt, Christian paleontologist. That's right. Yep. Where is it? The movie Mean Girls. The Christian paleontologist adds, I don't think we have any business being in there or trying to get a creationist or ID theory in there until science is taught as a process, you know, where, and on the sixth day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so Adam could hunt the dinosaurs and kill the homosexuals. Yeah, that bunch. Oh, my God. This is just embarrassing. Dr. Wise is looking forward to leading Southern Baptist Theological Seminary Center for Theology and Science. However, he acknowledges that his appointment as director is likely to cause consternation within any of the Christian community, as young earth creationism is a minority position in the church. A minority? You understand what that? Yeah, you do, and you probably, what? You're just, young earth creationism? Chew on it for a minute. Young Earth Creationism. Young Earth Creationism. Do you know what that means? Young Earth Creationism is saying that the Earth is only 5,000 years old. That's it. That's it. Just 5,000 years old. And the fact that you can find flint points used for hunting all over the globe that is 20, 30, 40,000, 50,000 years old. Well, that is demonic proof of the wiles of Satan. Please understand, I don't do this just in fun. I do this to prove minds of our children. They want to make them terrified, superstitious, afraid to step on a crack because you'll break your mama's back. Superstitious, malleable little tools. And this garbage, this unmitigated crap, will be coming to a public school near you, and they will bring it in screaming force, and you better be ready to fight. Because among other things, besides believing that the earth is only 5,000 years old, they're mean. So it's prayer meeting night on Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. You can make the air taste fresher, breathe as deeply as you please. You create a world of pleasure just by simply planting trees. Adding shade, creating beauty, it's just part of what they're worth. Make the world a better place with trees protecting the good earth. Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share.
This is Mike Love with the Beach Boys. Plant trees where you live. Go to arborday.org.
Edition. And just to wrap things up on this creepy little young Earth dude who's going to be trying to tell lots of little Southern Baptist children that, you know, Cro-Magnon man didn't exist, Neanderthal man didn't exist, like I said, with the dinosaurs placed in the fossil record to convince by Satan to confuse the unbelievers, there's a bookend to this story. And it is from last Friday, from the Scotsman. I think, this was sent to me by a listener. I think it was Gene. Might have been Victor. Believing that God created the universe in 6 days is a form of superstitious paganism, the Vatican astronomer Guy Consolmagno. Boy, am I good or what? Guy. Not so good after all. Guy Consolmagno claimed on Thursday, 4th of May. Brother Consolmagno, who worked in a Vatican observatory in Arizona and is curator of the Vatican meteorite collection in Italy, said a, quote, destructive myth, unquote, had developed in modern society that religion and science were competing ideologies. Science isn't an ideology. Science is facts. Believing that Adam and Eve rode to church every Sunday on a dinosaur is ideology. He described creationism, whose supporters want it taught in schools alongside evolution, as a, quote, kind of paganism because it harked back to the days of nature gods who were responsible for natural events. Brother Consolmagno argued that the Christian God was a supernatural one, a belief that had led the clergy in the past to become involved in science to seek natural reasons for phenomena such as thunder and lightning, which had been previously attributed to vengeful gods. Brother Consolmagno is a little bit off track too, don't you think? I mean, after all, that was his church that stuffed Galileo inside his house and said, you know, you're lucky we ain't burning you. Because Galileo had the unmitigated gall to suggest that the sun revolved around the earth and not vice versa. Religion, but he does make some points. Religion needs science to keep it away from superstition and keep it close to reality. No, well, brother, reality and religion don't mix. They don't. And I'm not gooning on anybody's faith. I have faith of my own. But I at least have the common good sense to realize that my faith is not fact-based. It's that dirty little word. It's believing. Not knowing. That simple. Religion needs science to keep it away from superstition and keep it close to reality, to protect it from creationism, which at the end of the day is a kind of paganism. It's turning God into a nature God. Now, my other problem with that, just to be square on this point, my other problem is that he uses the word paganism as though it were something dirty. Now, we're all talking about our little invisible friends here, right? So there are people out there who have invisible friends who live in trees, and invisible friends who live in rocks, and invisible friends who live in water, and invisible friends who live in the sky. And they've got lots of invisible friends. And paganism, I guess, what does he mean by paganism? Does he mean, is he talking about the Hindus? How about the Taoists? Is that pagan? How about the Buddhists? The Jainists? I don't know. But this notion that, if it ain't our brand, it's paganism. That's being kind of rough on the pagans, because I tell you what, I know some pagans, and I'm not necessarily talking about the motorcycle club either. Although I guess that... And most of them are more grounded in reality, including the motorcycle club. Most of them are more grounded in reality than, what was his name? Dr. Kurt Wise? A young Earth creationist? Heavens to Betsy, there are trees. There are trees that grow in California in the western desert. What are they called? Joshua tree? The bristlecone pines? Something like that? That were already past the sapling stage when Jesus was walking around on Earth, which means that, you know, if you want to get, you know, there's the whole chicken or the egg thing, but it means that there was something that was dropping one of those pine cones or seeds or something that was as old as it, and all you got to do is, you know, do three bristlecone pines and you're already past Dr. Wise's young Earth. Stupid. And Harvard gave this goober a PhD? I want a PhD from Harvard. Apparently they're easy to get now. Next time, I don't know. I mean, if this is how it is with Harvard and PhDs, and this goober gets one, the next time my kids are, hey, Dad, can I have a couple of quarters for the little junk machine? I'm going to put two quarters in, too, because I might get a PhD from Harvard. Gemini. It annoys me. It annoys me. I had good science teachers. Let's go to the phones.
Hello, Bob.
How's the rally going, Bruce?
Well, it's actually going kind of good, man. It looks like to me there's actually more anti-Minutemen people out here than there are Minutemen. So I'm thinking we're going to call the Minutemen the second men, and we're going to take the title Minutemen. What do you think about that, Bob?
I like that.
there's a huge crowd of folks. When I got here, there's probably maybe 20 people showed up, all waving American flags and wearing John Deere caps. And shortly thereafter, a contingent of Greensboro, the standing opposition in Greensboro, showed up with banners that are reading "Minutemen Get Lost" and "Minutemen Out of NC" and "No Borders" and a couple other interesting signs that I can't repeat on the air.
And, do you have your John Deere cap, Bruce?
What's that?
Do you have your John Deere cap?
No, I don't. I thought about it and decided that I needed to be who I am, right? But
yeah,
the Minuteman caravan pulled up, and it actually consists of about four or five RVs with handwritten signs on the side that say "Minuteman Caravan." You know, simplicity, I guess, is okay. But the,
is this kind of like when Granny Clampett was running for Possum Queen in Beverly Hills or something with the hand lettered signs and stuff?
I think so. The atmosphere is very festive there. Now we are currently separated by one of the largest thoroughfares in Greensboro. It's about five lanes across the road, but so, you know, there are signs and things have been yelled at each other. And let's see, let me read a couple signs. We have legal immigrants. Oh, no, we love legal immigrants. That's what something. One of the signs they've got on the other side of the street: secure the borders, enforce the law, stuff like that. So, and interesting, the Greensboro Police Department, of which, you know, has international fame,
right,
decided to tell the anti-immigrant or the anti-Minutemen folks that they couldn't have flags. However, the Minutemen folks are waving American flags on wooden poles and metal poles and you know, things that
any burning crosses?
I'm sorry?
Any burning crosses yet?
No burning crosses, although it's very plain to see the kind of hoods that could be whipped out in a moment's notice. And interestingly enough, as I'm looking across the street, I see the county Republican Party chairman standing with the Minutemen. So do you need any stronger indication that who supports this entire situation?
Well, and let's call it what it is, this entire fraud, Bruce.
Yes, exactly.
I've got in front of me here a solicit. You know, I've mentioned a number of times on the air that that some little wiseacre subscribed me to Newsmax.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I get their bulletins and their advertisements for their, you know, ED remedies and all of that crap. And in the middle of one of these, this paid announcement from one of our very good friend sponsors, soliciting money to build that wall across the southwestern U.S.
Yeah.
You know, if there's and they're proud of the fact, they say, you know, we've had the same people designing this wall as designed the Israeli fence.
Proud of that, eh?
Yeah, and true to form with what was the interview a couple of months back that you guys had on that John went and got that y'all ran on Fourth Estate
with
the journalist. Doggone it, the name escapes. Yeah, exactly. Robert Fisk, he said, you can't refer to it as a wall. If you do, you're an anti-Semite. Well, lo and behold, there it is in this goofy little art, goofy little ad that came from Newsmax. Oh, no, it's not a wall. It's a fence.
It's a fence you can't see through. See, where I come from, a fence has little barbs on it. You can pull them apart to go through it.
Yeah, right. Or it's made out of chain links or chicken wire or woven wire. And, yeah, you can look on one. You're on one side and you look and see the other.
I want you to get a...
Wait, is the USA thing starting, Bruce?
They're chanting, the people united will never be defeated. But the folks across the street, the anti-immigrant folks, are standing there looking very dispirited because there's actually more of us than there are of them. So I don't know.
I don't want you to get in harm's way or anything, Bruce, but is there any chance that you could get us an interview with any of these freaks?
I would maybe.
Okay.
I may be able to a little bit later. I think right now things are a little heated, and any crossing of the street may be met with impaled by American flag. So.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe if you disappeared and turned the proceedings over to Beauregard T. Clampett.
You know, Beauregard told me he was going to make a cameo appearance, so we'll see how it goes.
All right. Thanks very much, Bruce. Be safe. You're among weirdos, okay?
I know it.
Watch your damn back, all right?
I will. Thanks, Bob, and we'll let you know how things are going a little later on.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye now. He is. He's in a dangerous situation. These little Minuteman weirdos are severely bizarre. I mean, you know, the dangerous creepy. Okay, the kinds that you wouldn't turn your back on in a dark alley, or the steal the pennies off a dead man's eye. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we start talking about the Minutemen. And what's their leader's name? Chris Simcox or something? Yeah, here it is. I want to share this with you. Now, I'm going to share this with you. I went and I read it so you wouldn't have to. No donating to the Minuteman freaks, okay, please? Minuteman, okay, let's see. Dear Newsmax reader, below is a message from the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps National Citizens Neighborhood Watch Securing the American Border. What the hell does that spell? Let's see, MCDCNC. That spells Mick Dick Nick Nulsob. Don't blame me. I didn't name it. I'd have figured out something that spelled fence or wall or, we're Americans living legally. Wall. Below is a message from the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps National Citizens Neighborhood Watch Securing the American Border. See, I'm falling into the trap again. But you got to know what these... I mean, it's like with these anti-science people. You got to know what they're up to, because whether you realize it or not, they are already at war with you. These Minuteman types with their freakish little right-wing wives out there selling anchor babies. We talked about it. Minuteman Chris Simcox has announced another bold step to stop the flow of drugs, human trafficking, and illegal aliens crossing the border into the United States. After 9/11, when Simcox observed... Do you see what they just did? They just equated starving poor people with 9/11. And why not? Because they're so damn good at it. They had 73% of the United States citizenry convinced before the Iraq invasion that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. So now it's just the same crappy little tawdry tactic all over again. After 9/11, when Simcox observed large groups of illegal aliens moving freely through American national parks that border Mexico, he reported it to federal park rangers. Stop the flow of drugs, human trafficking, and illegal aliens. Hey, Chris Simcox, you darn moron. Here's a little 411 for you, buddy. The drug scourge that is plaguing America is being made in motel bathrooms in America. It's meth, buddy, and I got a sneaking suspicion you've been tasting it a little bit. With the smoke and ash from foreign attack upon the Twin Towers still covering New York City, Chris saw clearly that our borders must be secured. Chris, Simcox, buddy.
Hello, this is Isaac Hayes. Music and children. Have you ever wondered why young people take to music like fish to water? Maybe it's because music is fun, plain and simple. It offers kids a way to move their bodies and use their voices. It opens up their minds to dream about great dreams about where they can go and what they can do when they get older. As a young boy, I remember. Our kids, American kids, come from more cultures and backgrounds than any nation in history. And sometimes the most fertile common ground they share is that of music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Planet Check. He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charis Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, sesame, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
I'd like to tell you about an attacker and how my friend survived. He was hit in the head by a stroke and left unable to speak. He couldn't believe it was actually happening and didn't know what to do, so he didn't get help right away. And it only got worse. His left side got weak and he was helpless. Thankfully, someone realized what was going on and called 911. If they hadn't, my friend wouldn't be here now. If you're attacked by a stroke, call 911 immediately. The sooner you react, the better your chance of survival. I'm glad that he lived, but we're still praying and working on his recovery. So if it ever happens to you or someone around you, get emergency medical help right away. Don't try to deny it's an attack by a stroke. This is Will Downing, friend of a stroke survivor.
Strokes attack African Americans more often. Find out why. Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost. A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Back, I'm Bob. This is Head On, and let's not waste any time. Let's go straight to the phones. Haven't heard from David in a long, long while. Calling from Beckley. Hey, David, you're Head On.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. You?
Good. You're in Alabama?
I am indeed.
Hey, what are you doing?
helping take care of my father.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know why you were down there. Your father?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you if you felt the death, burial, and resurrection was part of Christian mythology or superstition.
Oh, it most assuredly is. It's heart and soul of it. Or at least the resurrection part. I mean, it's central to the mythos of Christianity, just like the resurrection of Osiris was central to the mythos of ancient Egyptian religion. I mean, there's Mithras, there's another one, and those all predate Christianity even.
So in other words, you don't believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ?
Sure, I do believe in it. But the word is believe. I don't know it. There is no evidence whatsoever to suggest that it happened. It is belief. It is something that is unknowable. It is only it's a creature not of the intellectual facilities of the mind, but rather of the heart. You can't prove that any more than you can prove how many angels dance on the head of a pin.
You believe it, but you view it as superstition?
Sure. It's mythos. It's the mythos of religion. To believe is not to know, David.
But you embraced, you embraced the Da Vinci Code, right?
Embrace it? No, I've read it.
I mean,
don't get that personal with books as to embrace them.
You're enthusiastic about the Da Vinci Code and the things that it propagates.
No, actually, no. Where the Da Vinci Code is concerned, I think there's a lot of hogwash in it. It comes on. For those who haven't read it, and I'm not going to spoil it or anything, but it comes on six guns ablaze, and then it ends with a whimper. My buddy John Fox just said, poorly written pop fiction. That's exactly what it is. I'll tell you what I do believe is very real. I believe the Gospel of St. Thomas is real. I believe the other Gnostic writings are very, very real, proven to be quite contemporaneous with the rest of the so-called Christian canon. But they were excluded by people who had a vested interest in seeing them excluded because they called upon people to question the emerging church hierarchy. The Gospel of Thomas is a mind-blowing thing. It's all red letters. It's just the sayings of Yeshua. You should have a look at it. Gnosis.org, GNOSSIS.org, and they've got translations of the Gnostic Gospels. You know, the Gospel of Judas that was announced a couple of weeks ago? That's valid too. And it makes a lot of sense. You know, the New Testament is not history. There's very little history in the New Testament, David. If you want history, that's not the place to be looking for it. That is faith-based stuff, and it's not knowledge-based. I mean, you know, this is a book that when you and I read it in translation, it says the dude's name was Jesus, and it just wasn't. His name was Yeshua. There's little Hebrew children running all over Israel named Yeshua. It's a name that you give little Hebrew boys.
But you believe that your salvation is inherent within the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and you choose to believe that.
I choose to believe that Yeshua taught us what was important in this life. Like the early followers of him, I didn't think that the magic happened on the cross. You know, St. Paul introduces all that foolishness. St. Paul didn't care. You know, he never mentions the virgin birth, for heaven's sakes, which is another probable piece of hooey. Yeshua taught us how to access the divine within ourselves and thereby be united with the creating force, whatever that happens to be.
So
you know, I mean, that's kind of where it is. You've got to understand how novel his teachings were for the time. When you know, when a guy in first century Palestine says that that the second commandment is to love our neighbor as ourselves, that was revolutionary liberal stuff. And that's the thing that so much of the fundies don't understand, David, is that Christianity, as it was preached by Yeshua, who didn't call it Christianity for starters, was a liberal liberation theology. That was going to change and did and was an attempt to change a very violent, hateful, nasty, self-centered world. So, you know,
I'm still unclear on whether you believe in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and whether you.
Well, does it? Does it matter? It's what I do or don't believe.
What do you mean? Does it matter?
It doesn't affect your salvation, does it?
What you believe doesn't, no.
No.
But
no.
I was trying to understand what basis you believe, you know, what's the basis of your salvation?
The stuff that I believe about Yeshua, I believe because of what's in Matthew, what's in Mark, what's in Luke, what's in the Gospel of St. Thomas. You could take John, Acts, Romans, and all of Saul of Tarsus's little chain letters, and chuck them in the fire, and it wouldn't matter a whit to me, because that's just a bunch of made up crap.
Do you believe there can be Christianity outside of the resurrection of Jesus Christ?
Absolutely. Again, the people who followed Yeshua did not follow him because they knew he was going to get nailed to an old tree trunk. They followed him because he was changing their lives as he lived, not as he died. And that seems very simple to me, David. I mean, I don't have to rely on magic to believe that I'm gonna commune with at some point. I'm gonna commune with the greatness that is all of us. You know, he referred to himself as the Son of Man, not the Son of God.
Well, so you don't believe that Jesus Christ was God?
Yes, I do. I also believe, David, that you're God. And I believe that I'm God, and I believe that Agnes is God, and I believe that God is in all of us. And you know, the seminal phrase on it, thou art God. Because that is what the Bible teaches.
What is it about Jesus Christ that you feel enables him to provide salvation? What do you feel that the resurrection did? What was the point of the resurrection, or what is it about Jesus Christ being God?
Well, let's sort this out, David. I don't know that the resurrection happened. Okay, it is something that I either believe or do not believe, and the rest of the world either believes or does not believe. It is not a knowledge base. Okay, for me, I don't need magic. I don't need rabbits out of hats. I don't need little cookies that turn into Jesus meat in my belly. I don't need a glass of Welch's grape juice that turns into Jesus blood in my stomach. I need the message. I need the message, David.
Do you need the forgiveness of sins to be regenerated?
I'll tell you a little secret, David. I have committed very few sins in this life. So have you. the concept of sin is a ginned-up fraud to explain away the evil deeds of evil men.
So a sacrifice once and for all for sin to give one the right to approach heaven, not by works, but by forgiveness, that's irrelevant to you.
Faith without works is dead, David. I mean, who is that, James? Faith without works is dead.
Well, what right is it then that you enter heaven if you can't work your way into it?
I don't enter it, David. I return to it. I've already been there. So have you. If you're asking questions in your mind about this, you've already been there. Because somewhere inside you is a spark that remembers it. And you have been there. You have been a part of the great and the good and the all. That's it. All these people that say, you know, oh, you'll go to heaven if you know, whether it's Swaggart or any of these other cretins who, oh, you know, send me more money and Jesus will love you. That's just crazy talk. You know, you want to be part of,
Hello?
Yeah, you there?
I lost you for the last.
No, sorry.
5 seconds. 5 seconds or so. You said if you want to be part.
Yeah, I said if you want to be part of the great and the good, that is the all, then go and do good and be good. And reach out.
So you just have an inherent, you believe you have an inherent right to enter heaven. Not because of the forgiveness of sins and not by works, but you inherently have a right to enter into heaven.
Well, no, see, part of this, David, you've got to understand is in the semantics of it or the vocabulary we're using. I reject heaven. I reject some Stone Age myth of a, you know, you got to understand, these Stone Age peoples lived in dirty places. Even the most civilized among them, whether it be Pontius Pilate or Caesar himself, had to struggle to stay clean. Rome, before Nero, Rome was a filthy, fetid place. So was Jerusalem. Every single urban center on the face of the planet had some element of nastiness to it as compared to how we live now. So their myth that they developed was that, you know, once they were dead, they would get to go to a place that was for once and for all freaking clean. And boy, we'd love gold, so there's going to be lots of gold, and pearls are very valuable, so the gates are going to be made out of pearls. Heaven, paradise, is the return to where we all came from. I mean, that's the closest I can get to it. But we are on top of the break, and the phone calls are lining up. I thank you for the inquiry, David, and I thank you for the chance to share. That's very important, and it's very kind of you.
Right.
I wish you very well.
All right.
Take care. Time for the news. When we come back, I guess we are in a full-bore prayer meeting edition, aren't we?
Handing it to northern cities and states, Senator Jeff Sessions said Tuesday. The civil rights-era law is up for renewal this year, and a group of leading Republicans and Democrats are actively supporting its extension. Sessions is not among them and instead is advising caution because parts of the law have become burdensome and irrelevant, he said. Quote, we don't want to fight over this. Alabama is proud of its accomplishments, but we have the right to ask why other areas of the country are not covered by it, unquote. Ratcheting up incidental reports related to Iran, the U.S. Army is now claiming that the Lynx helicopter shot down over central Basra at the weekend was most probably hit by a surface-to-air missile obtained possibly from neighboring Iran, after missile casings were discovered on the third floor of a nearby building, security sources in the city said yesterday. A military observation post had also reported seeing an unusual level of activity in the building during the previous 2 days. The missile is understood to have been identified as a Russian-made weapon that can be packed into a golf bag and quickly assembled and fired by one person with minimal training. No one from Iran has claimed responsibility for the attack. A second letter sent to the U.S. from Iran is said to have been written by an aide to Iran's Islamic leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. In the two-page letter, Hassan Rouhani defends Iran's resolution to acquire nuclear know-how, but makes an offer that the issue be taken off the U.N. Security Council and be dealt with by the IAEA. Rouhani wrote that Iran would consider ratifying the additional protocol, which provides for intrusive and snap inspections, and that it would also address the question of preventing breakout. Nuclear experts consulted said the letter offers hopeful signs that Iran may be willing to resolve the dispute over its nuclear activities. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's do another hour of it. What do you say? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On Wednesday night, our prayer meeting edition. And let's go straight to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're Head On.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm holding up.
Yeah, you're holding up very well. Might I say, Mr. Kincaid, that exchange that you just had with David was absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Well, you've described what I believe. It's, you know, I'm nowhere near as knowledgeable as you are, and I just love to listen to you. I mean, I think everybody in the world should hear what you just said. And it's something that, you know, I was raised a Catholic, and I think I've told you before, I'm no more Catholic than I'm Jewish. But, you know, from all the different things that I looked at, I got one thing, and that was in just about any religion, and I would say all religions, somewhere or another you will find something similar to do unto others. And
yeah,
that's what I've adopted and tried to live my life by. And I think that if people do that, and, you know, if all people adopted that, it'd be a hell of a lot better place to live. And that, you know, who knows what happens when you die. That's also a belief that's not founded in fact.
Yeah. Right. The only thing I have to observe is that if I'm buried, I rot. If I'm not, I'm ashes. You know, that I know.
Right. Well, me too. And I'm, you know, I'm vain enough to, I just can't accept that I'm dead or anyone's dead. I mean, I could accept that, you know, this thing that I'm inhabiting will quit functioning and rot and all that jazz, but I don't know. I just kind of think that my soul, my mind, my whatever will continue on, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'll ever be aware of that when this thing I'm inhabiting does quit working. But, you know, I can't compliment you enough on what you said. I think that was absolutely beautiful.
Well, coming from you, that means a whole lot to me, Wayne.
Getting on something else. I missed the first part of the program a little bit. I heard part of it. When are you going to put the monkey on trial? Huh?
No, this goon that's going to be head of the Science Center for the Southern Baptist Convention, his last post was in a college down where they had the Scopes monkey trial.
I know. I heard Jesus. It. I just figured.
Killing me, man.
I thought it fit pretty good, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Monkey on trial, which he needs.
Yeah, well, if we did impeach him, it would be the second monkey trial.
Yes, it would. And I, you know, and I truly hope that'll happen, you know. But I've been, you know, real busy here the last few days. You know, we had our primary yesterday.
Right.
And it was, well, from my viewpoint, it was very successful. There were four people that I supported and worked very hard for, and three of them won. And one of them was a real long shot, that senatorial race in the 10th district that I'm sure you're aware of. Fred Parker beat Leonard Anderson by 11 votes.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's great.
11 votes, yes. That's $9,000 versus $100,000.
And the $9,000 bought 11 more votes.
yes, sir. And a lot of hard work. So
yeah.
It was very.
Yeah, I don't mean that in terms of vote buying. I mean.
No, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
I do know what.
Well, you know, that wasn't the only. There was some serious coin thrown down on these races by some people who came away where the money didn't do the trick.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. But, you know, the guy that spent the most money in Raleigh County did succeed, but.
Oh, you mean the dog breeder?
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Green. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still having a hard time figuring out how you throw that kind of coin around for a $15,000 a year job.
Well, you know, if he wins, and becomes a senator, you know, this guy is pushing table games, which I really have no objection to. I mean, you know my feelings on gambling. Either do it all or get rid of it all, one or the other. And that includes church bingo.
Right.
So, you know, but this guy is, if they pass that table game legislation, this guy is a dog breeder, a greyhound breeder, which is
right.
One of the dirtiest, nastiest businesses that you could possibly be in, as far as I'm concerned. And if they pass that table game legislation, 8% of the proceeds from those table games goes to the Breeders' Cup, which will make Mr. Green a very, very rich man. And, you know.
Richer.
So, richer, yes. You know. So.
Yeah.
Because
apparently Mike Green is another one of those people who hasn't figured out that they don't hook U-Hauls to hearses.
Apparently so. And how?
Well,
you know,
but let me put your mind at ease, okay, Wayne? Yeah. I don't mean to be a pessimist, and I will be a Democrat till the day I die. But Mike Green is not going to win that Senate seat.
I don't believe he will either. And you know, because the religious people that back his opponent. Are not only against abortion, they're also against gambling. And
they're against abortion. They're against gambling. They're for war. They're against anything that's remotely related to common sense or intellect. And they will, they'll do the same dirty crap that they did the last time through when they did it to Bill Wooten. They'll go around plastering cars with little sheets on the windshield that don't say, interestingly enough, paid for by, you know, Russ Weeks minded.
Right, and all their preachers will preach in their churches and not lose their tax exempt, status and, the whole nine yards. But, I was sad to see Sally lose, but she handled it very well. And,
well, she's a classy lady.
Yes, she is a classy lady. Yes, she is a classy lady. So. But listen, I was thinking about, I was talking to Bruce and John the other night, and we were talking about unions. And you know that, we all know that the Democrats have a very good chance of taking back the House. And,
yes.
It's looking more and more like they're going to have a good chance of taking back the Senate also. And, Senator Ted Kennedy introduced legislation that now has over 200 backers in the House and Senate called the Employees Free Choice Act. Are you aware of what that is?
No.
If that act is passed, and if we get a Democratic Congress and Senate, it damn well better be, because we get to hold them responsible, 100%
right.
Responsible. The Employees Free Choice Act is a card-checked act. It will eliminate NLRB elections. If I, as an organizer, go to a group of workers and get 51% of those workers to sign authorization cards, the company is then obligated to sit down and negotiate a contract with the union.
And none of this waiting around for a year and pretending to be in good faith and all that garbage?
Exactly, and let all the, you know, these corporate people influence the NLR, what is it, B, the board, you know, to postpone elections and, well, play all the, you know, intimidate workers and hold closed session meetings and, you know, all the dirty, nasty things they do, you know.
Right.
And there's, you know, AFL-CIO has had a survey out for I don't know how long, and I don't know if I'm going to quote the exact numbers, but it's something like 47% of the people would choose a union if they did not have to fear losing their job. And if
right.
they pass this act, they will no longer have to have that fear.
And see, this, Wayne, this is where the rubber is going to meet the road, too, in another regard. These people that are howling about the so-called illegals out there.
Right.
Something like this goes through, then it's put up or shut up time. You sit there and said, oh, you know, it's about American jobs and the rights of the American worker. Well, right there, what you just described is critical to the rights of the American worker.
That's exactly right. It's
critical and if
to
they,
workers
and if
all
they
over the world.
If,
listen,
yeah, if they come out against it, they've just made hypocrites of themselves.
Yes, they do. And you know, I mean, you know, a lot of people are under the impression that the United States has the greatest, most wonderful liberal labor laws in the world. Not, you know, Europe uses this card check system. Canada uses the card check system. You know, we're the only, you know, industrialized company that has this simple NLRB election junk. And, you know, does is take rights away from workers.
Right. It means that majority rule is by function of law eliminated in the workplace.
That's exactly what it means. That's exactly what it means. And, you know, with the corporations having a status as a citizen, the same rights as a citizen, they can stop you from talking to each other in work. At, you know, on their property about unions and stuff. So,
boy, that's some civil right.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, we're losing them every day. Every day.
Yeah.
If it was up to the monkey and whom we soon hope to put on trial, we wouldn't have any rights. You know, they're eliminating them every day.
Well, no, wait a minute. That's not entirely fair, Wayne. If you are a multimillionaire...
You have
all kinds of rights.
Yes, you do. The right to abuse other people is one of
and the right not to and the right not to pay not to pay your way in America and have some working stiff pay your way for you, not to pay taxes. Did you see the House of Representatives? You know, you'd think that these guys would be a little bit cautious, knowing that their necks are on the chopping block, but the tax cut thing.
Yeah.
Sailed right through the House today. It's a done deal. It goes to George Bush for his signature now.
Okay, there was also a vote in the Senate on tort reform. Do you know how that went?
No, I didn't see that. I was busy yanking at what little bit is left of my hair over this daggum tax cut thing. You know, making sure that the wealthiest Americans get to continue to pay the alternative minimum tax, which was never designed for them in the first place.
Right. Oh, did they eliminate
instead,
it?
No, they didn't eliminate it.
Huh?
They extended it. They extended it.
Did they extend the minimum thing?
Yeah, the alternative minimum tax.
Yeah. They extended
Yeah. The text I've got here is it would also extend for this year recent changes to the alternative minimum tax originally aimed at making sure the wealthy pay at least some taxes to prevent it from hitting more upper middle income families. So, you know, there you go.
Well, there's one thing everybody has to keep in mind. If, in fact, we do gain control of both houses of Congress, anything they do now can be changed. And that needs to happen. You know, that needs to happen. And that's where we go to your thing of holding people responsible. And you know, we need to do that. We need to do that, and we need to let all these so-called Democrats know that you will be held responsible. You have now got control. You have 2 years to prove yourself, or you will not be there in 2 years.
You don't want to do the work. We'll find somebody who wants.
Exactly. You don't want to go there and do, you know, it. I get so upset with all these right-wing people, and you know, with, you know, the meanest, the nastiest word in the dictionary now is welfare. And, you know, I've asked this question of many of them. What is the biggest function of government? I don't care what government it is, if it is not the welfare of the people that they govern.
Exactly. And I don't know why that's so hard to figure out.
I don't either. And, you know, corporations have to be stripped of their rights as a citizen.
Yes.
How could a corporation have the same rights as an individual?
Well, how can something that never dies a natural death or lives a natural life or is born, I mean, here's a pro-life issue for you, be a person?
That's just stretching
it a little too far in my book.
But they surely managed to do it, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, I think legislation along those lines is more than warranted. Wayne, I really appreciate it. I'm going to try to catch another call here before the break comes in. Sorry it didn't work out 100% for you, but, you know, 99 is pretty good.
Listen, when I was in school, I didn't get very many 75%. So 75% is real good for me, brother.
Take that C and run with it.
There you go. Talk to you
Thanks,
later,
Wayne.
Pal.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
And Chris has waited forever and ever and ever, and I'm sorry, but let's go to Chris now. Thanks for your patience, man.
Chocolate Jesus, baby.
That's right.
It's got to be a chocolate Jesus. That's right. How can it be a broken border when Minutemen are putting up a fence?
I know. These guys make me crazy.
Yeah, let's have a picnic and a barbecue and let's put up a fence.
Yeah, but, you know, I still haven't gotten an answer to whether or not you take dead aim, these Minutemen. Do you take dead aim or do you lead them a little bit?
No, actually, you shoot straight up and I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, okay.
You just spray a bullets and you'll hit more than you aim at. They are bigger than the subject itself.
Oh, well, you know, the ground. Well, listen to this. This is from the stupid little solicitation from the Minutemen. The groundbreaking will begin in Arizona on Memorial Day weekend, just 30 days from now, unless in the interim President Bush deploys National Guard and Reserve troops to immediately secure the out-of-control southern border. Chris, we could do that, couldn't we? Except all of our reserve troops are somewhere else.
As long as those troops understand that they're under the command of the Minutemen, I think everything will go just fine.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's like it was said last night. It's that dude from King of the Hill, Hank Hill's neighbor that wears the wife beater T-shirt and always has a cigarette hanging off his lip and a trucker cap.
Yeah,
that's the Minutemen.
Well, the Times Daily called me today, the local newspaper here, and I wrote a letter to the editor about KKK rally the other day, so they're going to put it in the paper.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's
well. I caught the editorial today, and you know, it was a little bit wishy washy. I think it could have been stronger, but the fact of the matter is, they said what I said. If you're out there on the same side of an issue as the Klan, it speaks for itself.
I write in the letter. If you start agreeing with them on one issue, then, you know, you're all for church burning and burning people of color and lynching them and everything. If
yeah.
you agree with them on one thing, it's going to be pretty hard not to do the. God, it just makes me so mad. But I don't know if you've noticed. I think I mailed you both of them. I'm working on the Hookergate story. In the Mansour.
Yeah, that thing's simmering along. It won't quite go away, will it?
No, I'm giving it the old Hunter Thompson approach. It's going to get even better. Did you read the second one?
Nahash
at the Watergate.
Oh, yeah. That was gorgeous.
Yeah, flashing the hash, that's an old term. That's an old derogatory term for vomiting. So that's what this makes me want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now tell us again, where can people go and read these things, Chris?
TheMantelReport.blogspot.com.
And that's MANSEL.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the last sentence of this thing that I wrote to the editor, I'm sure some people are going to have a problem with it. I'll probably get to argue with some folks in the paper, which, hey, that's fine with me. Illegal immigration is a problem in this area and in our country, but why handle the situation? But the way to handle this situation is not to round up everyone with a Spanish accent. I'm sure any Jewish man or woman with numbers on their wrists would agree.
I think you're right.
And that's, these Minutemen, well, despite the connotation of that name, that's probably about the intellectual stamina that they have. Let's just put it that way.
I understand, but I've seen interviews with these people. You know, they think Tom Tancredo is a great American. They're just sickos. I mean, they are. They're Klansmen without the sheets.
The picture that was in our local paper, it showed a crowd of people standing in front of the pastor. KKK representative was a pastor. That just represents so many things. There was one man in the audience. I would love to know who this guy is. Everybody's standing there looking up. And this one guy's got his hand on his chin like, That one person scares him. The living hell out of me.
Yeah. Because sitting there looking like Rodan at the Klan rally.
He's got kids more than likely. He's going to raise kids.
It's spooky.
Well, you know.
You know, and meanwhile, I got a story from our friend Gene out in Oregon about complaints in South Carolina that all school districts weren't observing Southern Confederate Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
This last Monday or whatever.
Oh, what about doing background checks on who you bring to the prom? Criminal background checks on who you can bring to the prom.
Your date is not in order. That is not an approved corsage.
The back of your pickup is not in order.
Hey, Chris, we got to hit the break, brother. Oh. Thanks so much, and I'll keep an eye out in the paper for your letter.
Censorship. I've been censored. Okay, take care.
All right, later, man. See ya. We do have to take a break because I didn't take one in the middle of the half hour. And coming up, your evening Cup of Joe report from our good buddy Joe Vecchio. The Cup of Joe show in its fullness can be heard every Saturday night at 8 p.m. right here on the Head On Radio Network. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, of course. And me? I'm just little old Bob. And this is the Head On Radio Network.
Hold up. Between half-truth and victimization, fighting back with counterattacks, it's when the rose gold goes riding, when the rope goes gliding.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. A recent article in the New York Times points out a potential problem in some mega-rich communities where housing is so expensive that teachers, policemen, and firemen are in short supply because no one who earns that kind of salary can afford to live there. The article mentions a group of volunteers who, with the help of Habitat for Humanity, are refurbishing an old home that's on land that was purchased by the county for a water storage tank. This home would be for a fireman. While naturally I applaud the people who are doing this, I think it says something about the society we now live in that teachers, policemen, firemen, and other civil servants, who are an integral part of any community, need to live in an old house fixed up by local volunteers and Habitat for Humanity. It demonstrates clearly how little we value the people who provide these necessary services, and it demonstrates what great lengths the very rich will go to make sure that they get the services they need and still be able to distance themselves from those providing them. I don't begrudge anyone having great wealth, but when it gets to the point where some begin to believe that more money makes you more human, and therefore that less money makes you less human, then it begins to pose a threat to everyone, rich and poor alike. Whether they want to believe it or not, the richest of the rich need the social infrastructure just as much as do the poorest of the poor. If it collapses for one group of people, it can collapse for others. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
I'm about to bring up something that probably it's occurred to me many times. I don't know about you, you know, but I had an experience once, and this story that I'm about to tell you is a moderately eerie story. Have you ever ridden around the country any place outside of Jersey, anywhere, West Virginia, Connecticut, any place, and you see all those... You see all those street signs? Who wrote it? Barbara.
Once there was this kid who.
All right, welcome back. We're halfway through this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wednesday evening. If you want to get involved with the discussion, and it's 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Slow down, Bob. 877-443-2366. I haven't given the phone number all night. Shame on me. Sorry about that. Email's real easy, too. bob@headonradio.com. And let's go to the phones. David, our friend in Maine, has been waiting quite a while. Hey, David, you're head on. Thanks for waiting.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to talk about the tax cuts, which I think is really ridiculous in itself. I also wanted to mention the itinerary thing, you know, a few things like that. But the first thing I want to start out with is I saw a really good film with my family this evening, Jonathan Demme documentary called The Agronomist, and it's about it's kind of like parallel to what you guys are doing, starting a radio network and whatnot. But this radio network was in Haiti. And he started it in the 70s or maybe the 60s. And what he did was he went on the air and he spoke truth to power, even though he was exiled two times, mind you. So if anyone tells you about they had a hard time with their donuts or their coffee wasn't right or something like that, just watching this documentary, it'll put it all in perspective. Even all of the just what he had to deal with of being in exile, I can't imagine, for like 6 years in New York. It's a really fascinating documentary. I couldn't recommend it enough.
And the title again, please?
The Agronomist.
The Agronomist?
Yeah, but it's by Jonathan. It's directed by Jonathan Demme. It'll knock you out, Bob. I mean, when you see it, and he has such fire in his eyes, and it basically talks about the Haiti coup while he was on the air. It gives you a background of his family. What Demme did was a masterstroke. He weaved everything together. So you don't have to be from Haiti to understand anything, but at the same time he kept the cultural significance intact with it, and he just weaved it so there is a storyline, there's an arc, and it's not leapfroggy or it's completely cohesive, and when you watch it, it's just a powerful story for anyone.
Well, excellent. I'll have a look. I'll have a look for it.
Yeah,
we've got a running list of like movies we're going to watch when Agnes and I get to be back together again and things
right.
Because you know it's more fun that way.
Russian Ark's the other one that I already mentioned.
Yes.
And also, I wanted to mention this because nobody's talking about it. I think it's a damn shame. Marvel Comics, you wouldn't seem that would be the last one to do a social commentary, but Marvel Comics put together a series called Civil War, and basically what it does is it tells you the story of America involved with superheroes, but it doesn't take sides of how our civil liberties are being stripped away for homeland security. And the superheroes, it's a series being put out this year, and the first issue is out now. And it's a series of how it deals with the impact of society and the choices you make. Is it worth having your civil liberties stripped? And I thought it was a really I thought that writer really had some courage to put that on the table for Marvel Comics and whatnot. And I guess it's getting press on NPR. Reuters.
Is it out yet, or is it yet to be released?
Well, the first one's out right now, and it's called Civil War, and basically it deals with all the Marvel superheroes. The storyline deals with all the Marvel superheroes coming to terms with are they going to sacrifice their civil liberties for the people, or are they going to let homeland security run rampant? So,
wow.
It's an interesting story. But the thing I love about it is I think people need to do more along the lines of the storylines like this, too. When you take such a polarizing type storyline, like the liberal and the everyone, and I mean, if you truth speaks in itself. So I think what the left needs to do more along the lines, when they do storylines and documentaries and whatnot, we've hit them with so many different types of we're the righteous left or what have you. I just think it's better to just like leave it open for the observer to decide in a lot of cases. And I think that's a little bit of the issue that a lot of people take with what we have to say. I think it's clear when you watch something like that, you decide for yourself. And I really applaud Marvel for not going either way with it, leaving the reader to decide, which is just, I don't know. I think that's really the smart way to do it. You still there? Hello? Hello?
I'm sure he is. Something must have just
Something
happened.
Died.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Well, like I was saying about the Marvel comics, I think that it's a very impressive format they're putting together for the young people out there.
It is.
And I applaud them for that. So that's kind of like my, I guess, my basic hero of the week. Let me see. What else interested me? Oh, this letter went to Iran. Yeah, that was another thing I was going to talk about. You know, I think this president of Iran has something in all seriousness. I think all the countries should write the same kind of letter expressing their warnings. And, I hear something ringing.
Oh, no, that's my sound effects. I think that.
No, that's me.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. Okay, go ahead.
So I was talking about Iran and the letter that the president made.
Yes.
I think I think he's hit the nail on the head in a certain way, where I think all the countries need to write these letters so it is out in the open of how they expressed their distrust with this administration. I think all of the countries should send these letters like one after another every week, so it's clear. When history looks back, if they do decide to attack Iran, they'll see that all these countries were not behind the United States.
Well, I think it's sad to say, but a lot of countries are going to have to separate themselves from the U.S. Precisely because of the level of evil that we are doing right now. David, daggummit, I've got the text of the letter in front of me. And it makes me crazy because half of this stuff is more than sane. These aren't the, you know, we've painted, and I'm guilty of it, I've painted Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as a crazy dude and said that he's crazy because he keeps poking the other crazy guy with a stick.
Well, I think part of the thing that Mujinamad, whatever his name is, he needed an editor with that letter. He said, Dear Mr. President, a lot of different times in the letter. I was like, okay, I get it. You're talking to the president.
Yeah, but it's also, if the translation is true, it's very conversational in style. And, you know, he says things like, I've been thinking how one can justify the undeniable contradictions that exist in the international arena, which are being constantly debated, especially in political forums and amongst university students. Many questions remain unanswered. These have prompted yada yada. Can one be a follower of Jesus Christ and feel obliged to respect human rights, present liberalism as a civilization model, announce one's opposition to proliferation of yada, make war and terror his slogan, and finally work towards the establishment of a unified international community, a community in which Christ and the virtues of the earth will one day govern, but at the same time have countries attacked, the lives, reputations, and possessions of people destroyed, and on the slight chance of the or of a criminal in a village or city or convoy, for example, the entire village, city, or convoy set ablaze.
I think he makes a valid point, and I'd just like to add to that, Juan Cole, and I don't know if you heard about this, but Juan Cole and Christopher Hitchens got into a row a bit about the term. Juan Cole claims, I guess Christopher Hitchens stole from a discussion group that Juan Cole was on of professors and whatnot, and he mm-hmm. put out there in one of his columns that Juan Cole believed that the president of Iran didn't say, wiped off the face of the map. Because he believes, this is Juan Cole's assessment now, he believes that the president of Iran did not say that, and there is no words for wiped off the face of the map in Persian. So I found that kind of interesting.
Very much so.
And it makes me think, well, then who's the one who's translating? Because that's horribly, and if you look at the exact translation of it, Bob, it's not even close to it. It says take something like remove power from the Israeli state, not wiped off the map. And it makes me wonder, why is Christopher Hitchens so uppity about this? he's like this attack dog over a word, and it's so funny because.
Well, Christopher Hitchens is just an ugly old drunk. I mean, let's understand that first and foremost. That's all he is. I'm not trying to be facetious, David. He shows up on these so-called news programs. He looks like he just got out of the gutter. He talks down as if he has some level of either moral or intellectual superiority. When frankly, you could probably beat him in a game of trivia at the little electronic machine at the corner of any bar. He has no relevance to me whatsoever, and to find out that he would be a plagiarist or a thief, that's no leap for me.
I got to agree with you on that one. I think, though, what Juan Cole wrote in you have to see the Juan Cole post. If you go to juancole.com, his answer to Christopher Hitchens, it's just out there. I don't think there's any way that Christopher Hitchens can even come back to what Juan Cole said about him. And he basically said his assessment that there is no words for wiped off the face of the map, which I wouldn't have known. I don't think many people would have known. I mean, that's such a damaging detail. If there is no words for wiped off the face of the map, who's the translator? That's who I want to know.
Well, exactly that. Do you remember David, a month and a half ago when CNN got temporarily tossed out of Iran for just outright lying about translations?
Yeah, I do remember that.
They got thrown out for translating Ahmadinejad's words as discussing developing a nuclear weapon when he said no such thing. There is not a single shred of evidence out there, David, that Iran is trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Not one. Because every one of the processes that are described in their nuclear program is first and foremost a necessary condition precedent to having a civilian nuclear power program. Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And India isn't.
And you know what, though, Bob? This is something that really needs to be more addressed in the terms like, and Iran is entitled to have any kind of nuclear weapons. Everyone's entitled to have weapons if everyone else has. It's just such a stupid rule. It's insane is what it is. So what you're saying is Israel can have a nuclear bomb the size of Earth, and they'll be like, okay, that's all right, but because they're Israel.
We trust them.
We trust them with the
Now, I'm going to say something. Somebody's going to holler, oh, God, he's an anti-Semite. I am not. I absolutely am not. I mean, but we had matzo ball soup for dinner this evening, okay? I'm no anti-Semite.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, if you buy into the Bible as history, and this is just a fact, if you buy into the Bible as history and you go to the Old Testament, you will find out that one of the first, if not the first, recorded accounts of an attempt at genocide was committed by the children of Israel. It's just plain fact.
I don't doubt
it. If you treat the Bible as fact.
I don't doubt it. I think what David was bringing up earlier, I think people like that need to realize that spiritual redemption does not come through a hammer of persecution and imperialism. It never does. That's ridiculous.
No.
How can anyone...
No, the salvation that Yeshua was talking about, David, was something that happens inside an individual. It cannot, by definition, happen inside a congregation. It just can't. And I don't know why that's so hard to understand. But the fact, I mean, if you recall that early Bible story I referenced, the children of Israel were commanded by Yahweh or Jehovah or whatever you want to call him, who at that point in time was apparently a very, very childish, hateful, spiteful God. The children of Israel were commanded to kill the Canaanites down to the last person, and God got mad at them because they didn't. They tried, but they didn't.
I tell you about this whole religious cult thing. I mean, if people are so worried about it, and it's in your own backyard, for goodness sakes. I mean, who they made number 10 Warren Jeffs, who is the Church of Further Latter-day Saints, the guy that married like 40 women, and he
I got a couple of wives in his mighty bigamy. Yeah, that guy.
That guy. Go after him. He has a 2,000-acre ranch. There's your new David Koresh. Don't mess it up like Waco, though.
David, I love what you bring to the table. We got a bunch of callers waiting. I got to roll on, but thank you so much.
All right, have a good night, Bob.
You too. And let's see. Let me check something here. Agnes, do we need to take a break or do you want to roll on? Okay. We'll take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. Like I said, a couple of open lines if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a Wednesday night prayer meeting edition right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricane, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works, and other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Before the hour, time to get another phone call in. Let's go straight to the phones. Jim is with us, calling in from West Virginia. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
I don't think 6.5 minutes is going to do it, buddy.
Do your best.
No, I don't want 6.5 minutes. I need it after you. You can go somebody else, and I'll come on. There's something I want to share.
Jim, if you've got something to say, buddy, say it.
I don't have 6.5 minutes. Won't do it.
All right. Next caller. Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, you're head on.
Bob.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I was just more or less listening, but I'm really enjoying your program. I was wondering about your dad. And
yeah, we're doing what we can do.
Yeah. Did you hear that Mel won his race over there?
Yes, I did, and I'm very proud for him. Now the hard work starts.
Yeah, his buddy that he tried to help too run right behind him. But the main thing of it is, over here, there was only one of Shirley Love's monkeys that won. He backed, he tried to upset Randy White with this Greg Tucker, and as far as we know, he only got one of his people in, and that was Dave Perry, you know, the that works for the Board of Education. So we done a pretty good job on them, so that area should be quiet for a while. But how's everything else?
Well, what happened to the, what happened? I'm not up there. What happened to the judges' race, Ed?
Well, Keenan lost, but it was just a matter of who, you know, I guess who you picked. But I don't understand how they could put a person like Blake back in there. I don't understand it, and I'm not sure that Shirley Love was behind him, but the main thing is he lost all of his, he lost a lot of clout when he lost most of the people that he normally backs and, you know, takes money to support.
Right.
So I think we did pretty good in this county, and then Margaret Staggers won, so... That was a good lick. So,
well, you know, at least in Fayette County, the Republican presence is weak enough that winning the Democratic primary is pretty much a shoo-in.
Yeah. Well, but you still got the Republicans, pardon me, that's running. You know, they're still Republicans. Shirley Love is a Democrat. He's and, you know, and neither are some of his monkeys. They're, most of them is thoroughbred Republicans. Like I told you, they're Republicans trying to wear a Democrat coat.
Yeah, they're what we call Dinos, Democrats in name only.
Yeah, they know they to get in office, they have to run on the Democrat ticket. But old Mel worked his butt off to get in over there, and just real pleased that if we can do that on the national level, maybe able to bring things back in under control. But you know what? I listen to your callers, and they know more about what's going on in this country than the people here do.
In many ways, I mean, the people of the United States, at least some of them, Ed, you know, folks like you, folks like Mel, Wayne, everybody just about who listens to this program, are tuned into what this nation needs, and they're not suckered in by the false arguments.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, and the evidence is there to see, right now, 60-some percent of the nation is against Bush, and the thing of it is, some of us saw it ahead of time. We talked against it. We fought against it. And then some people have to live and learn, and others just live. So maybe this will wake them up, though, Bob.
Well, you know, the thing is, 60-some-odd percent of America disapprove of George Bush, dislike George Bush, and, you know, I just have to sit and scratch my head about that 30 or 28 or, you know, the 19% that think Dick Cheney's doing a good job. I don't know. I'm thinking they're living under a bridge drinking wine out of a screw-top bottle, Ed.
Well, I heard somebody say that if he jumped off a cliff, that same bunch would be in his pocket.
You're absolutely right.
So
I know you waited a long time, but we've got to get to the top of the hour. It's always good to hear from you.
Same here, Bob, and good luck on what's going on down there.
Thanks. I do appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. It is time to go to the news. Let's take a little break. Openings on the lines if you want to jump in. 877, number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Alfonso Jackson, HUD secretary, has, through a spokesperson, made an attempt to retract his earlier statements of keeping opponents of Bush from being awarded HUD contracts. Dusty Tucker, a spokeswoman for Jackson, told the Dallas Business Journal Tuesday that Jackson's comments at his April 28th speech were purely, quote, anecdotal. She said, quote, he was merely trying to explain to the audience how people in D.C. will say critical things about the secretary, will unfairly characterize the president, and then turn around and ask you for money. He did not actually meet with someone and turn down a contract. He's not part of the contracting process, unquote. The White House released visitation records of Jack Abramoff today. The official record lists only two visits during the last 6 years, contradicting the memory of Abramoff himself, who claims to have visited Bush dozens of times. 99 tons of AK-47s bound for Iraq's security forces from U.S.-controlled warehouses in Bosnia have disappeared. The four planes bound for Iraq never arrived at their destination. The arms deal was sanctioned by the U.S. Department of Defense, though was carried out by a network of small arms dealers. To add insult to injury, the airline that carried the arms was cited by the UN recently for delivering arms to Liberia, fueling the violence there. The disappearance of 200,000 AK-47s further highlights the out-of-control arms trade that has escalated in the years following the invasion of Iraq. George Bush's itinerary was found yesterday in Florida in the trash. The itinerary outlined who would be on Air Force One, where the entourage would be days in advance, and who was carrying the nuclear codes. The man who found the itinerary was a sanitation worker who was very surprised to find a document such as this in the trash. The White House says the papers should have been burned. Comair has asked a bankruptcy judge to reconsider his decision last month to let stand its contract with its flight attendants union. In its filings, the regional airline said Judge Adlai Harding's April 26th order overlooked facts and included legal errors. Comair, a subsidiary of the bankrupt Delta Airlines, says cuts in flight attendants' salaries are vital to the regional airline's restructuring. Harden ruled against Comair 2 weeks ago, saying the cuts it sought were deeper than from other workers and that it hadn't bargained in good faith.
This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral. She would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
The Voting Rights Act and its protections for minority voters may no longer be necessary in parts of the South and Alabama, but Congress should consider expanding it to northern cities and states, Senator Jeff Sessions said Tuesday. The Civil Rights Era law is up for renewal this year, and a group of leading Republicans and Democrats are actively supporting its extension. Sessions is not among them and instead is advising caution because parts of the law have become burdensome and irrelevant, he said. Quote, we don't want to fight over this. Alabama is proud of its accomplishments, but we have the right to ask why other areas of the country are not covered by it, unquote. Ratcheting up incidental reports related to Iran, the U.S. Army is now claiming that the Lynx helicopter shot down over central Basra at the weekend was most probably hit by a surface-to-air missile obtained possibly from neighboring Iran, after missile casings were discovered on the third floor of a nearby building, security sources in the city said yesterday. A military observation post had also reported seeing an unusual level of activity in the building during the previous 2 days. The missile is understood to have been identified as a Russian-made weapon that can be packed into a golf bag and quickly assembled and fired by one person with minimal training. No one from Iran has claimed responsibility for the attack. A second letter sent to the U.S. from Iran is said to have been written by an aide to Iran's Islamic leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. In the two-page letter, Hassan Rouhani defends Iran's resolution to acquire nuclear know-how, but makes an offer that the issue be taken off the U.N. Security Council and be dealt with by the IAEA. Rouhani wrote that Iran would consider ratifying the additional protocol, which provides for intrusive and snap inspections, and that it would also address the question of preventing breakout. Nuclear experts consulted said the letter offers hopeful signs that Iran may be willing to resolve the dispute over its nuclear activities. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Hey, all right, let's do another rousing hour of conversation radio. I'm Bob. This is Head On the Head On Radio Network. The horn, we're crying out loud. The phone number you have just heard, 877-443-2366. Email's easy, bob@headonradio.com. On the heels of last night's primary election in West Virginia, let's go right to the phones and talk to our good friend Steve Nicholas from Jackson County, West Virginia. He was a candidate on that ballot, and he successfully passed the test. Going to be on the general ballot in November, right, Steve?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Bob. Didn't really have to beat anybody, but as far as the actual vote totals go, I was the top vote getter in either primary yesterday, so that's something.
That says a lot.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I was shocked by that myself, because when I saw the first numbers in, I had like 11 more than Carmichael did in his primary, and it started building and building. And I was kind of wondering, is this going to hold? Is this going to hold? And then I was kind of hoping, well, maybe I can get 50% of the primary vote. I got 48%, but that's definitely a lot better than I thought I'd be doing. So,
well, that means people took the time to check your name and go that far down the ballot. That's important.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take, because, I mean, there is no time for the weary. There's no rest for the weary for me. It's right on to November now.
No, and you also recognize that now is when he will start pouring his money into the process.
Well, to some extent he already has, because I've been spent by something like 5.6 to 1 so far. So, I mean, obviously I wasn't going all out, but I guess we'll see how much. But I'm going to try to test a big theory. Can shoe leather beat wallet leather?
That's a great way of looking at it, Steve.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take. And I've been...
But a little bit of the wallet leather wouldn't hurt either, would it?
No, it wouldn't. Because even at the very least, I got to have some wallet leather to give out information when I do knock on the doors. So, and on my internet site, in the next day or two, hopefully, I'm going to get I finally got the arrangements worked out to accept online contributions. Now I need to just get it set up on the website. So, in just a matter of days, if any of your listeners want to contribute online, they'll have the opportunity to do so.
And so that's the is that the Steve 4WV?
Yeah.
Yes. What was that? Steve4WV.yahoo.com? Or GeoCity?
www.geocities.com/Steve4W. Steve, the number 4WV. And if anybody wants to volunteer, the email address is Steve, the number 4WV@yahoo.com.
Okay, and what kind of help are you looking for, Steve?
Well, I'm going to need people to knock on doors. Another thing, June 18th, I'm going to be having a fundraiser at the Jackson County Farm in Collegeville. So if you want to come to that, or if you want to, or if people want to provide some sort of food, so that way I don't have to dip into the campaign account so much. I've already got desserts provided for from the people at the Democratic Women's Club. So if people are interested.
Okay, if folks are interested, that's geocities.com, Steve, the number 4WV. You still there with me, Steve? All right. I don't know what happened to Steve. Let me see what I can do here in terms of getting things back to the way they ought to be. Okay. Agnes. Okay. Thank you. I don't know what happened. I must have lost Steve somehow. Are you there? Are you there, Agnes?
Yeah.
There you are, Steve.
Yeah, I'm back on the cell. It's a little bit cloudy out, so the reception might not be too good tonight. So,
oh, yay. It's not my fault for a change.
Good.
Well, Steve, are you in terms of the campaign as you see it going forward? Did you talk a lot of issues oriented stuff going into the primary, or is now the time that you go at it?
Well, I haven't really laid everything out yet. I've sort of been trickling it out, but I've got the 10-part plan or the 10-part proposal on my website, Standing for Opportunity, and I've got a copy of that. That's been my pamphlet, just to have my name on it, campaign slogan, Standing for Opportunity, contact information. So This is gonna be an issue campaign. I mean, that's the way it's been from the beginning, and I think that's the only way to do it. Because, I mean, if nothing else, I've got to raise these issues and try to force that into the public arena. And also, I think that the issue is where I win. So.
Well, what kind of overall voter turnout did you have in your district yesterday, Steve?
It was real light. I mean, I don't know if the exact district, but there for the district, but they said the county as a whole was something like 22%, which really surprised me. So I'm not really sure what happened or what the deal was with the numbers, because I mean everybody seems surprised by that, because the early numbers had it like 34%, and then it just seemed to drop as the night went on. So,
well, I heard it was extremely low over in Raleigh County as well. So, you know, it's an off-year election. Maybe that's the way it worked out. But when you've got a light turnout like that, you know, of course, that tells you, Steve, that you've got to really, really work on this.
Yeah.
To get people, you know, to motivate the voters.
Yeah, because last night I got 1356, and I've done the math, and it'll probably take about 3,500 votes to win the district. So that's 9 to 12 a day. So that's the way I'm thinking of it, because if I try to think, oh, my God, I got to get 2,000 more votes, then you just go crazy that way. So I just think of it as, well, if I just get X number a day, and
right,
I'm going to try to reach out to the people who voted for Randy Fisher in the Republican primary, because I think that, because he ran as a moderate compared to Carmichael, who is one of the most conservative members of the state House of Delegates.
So, yeah, and Carmichael is also a big Bush licker, too. I mean, he loves George Bush.
Well, let him and the the other 31% love Bush, so let's let the other 69% have our say.
Exactly. Majority rule, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that's, Steve, that's geocities.com/Steve, the number 4WV, correct?
Yeah.
And the email address?
Is Steve, the number 4WV, at yahoo.com.
Okay, and you're looking, have you, is all your website stuff done, your site design and all of that? We've got some pretty sharp web folks out there in the audience.
Well, I'm keeping it pretty basic because, I mean, it gets updated quite a bit, and we're getting ready to add some stuff to get ready for the general election, and I've got my health care proposal is on the website now, and I'm adding another essay, another issues page on the environment soon. So things are going to be added pretty regularly as time goes on.
Well, I think you've got the right attitude, Steve, and you've got the right ideas. I think they're going to speak to people, and you know, I hope you can get the support you need over there because Carmichael is a you know, you were very generous. I'll say no one, he's one of those who needs to be out of the House of Delegates in a hurry. We don't have time, Steve, for the kind of dead from the neck up thinking that the Republican Party either in West Virginia or in any other state in the Union now represents.
Well, that's why hopefully November 7th we can throw a big party to celebrate his retirement.
That's what I'm hoping. Steve, take care. Best of luck. And be in touch with me. Drop me another email sometime, will you?
I certainly will. And thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling. It's always my pleasure.
Bye.
Take care. Bye now. We've got to take a break. Steve Nicholas, Democratic nominee in the West Virginia 12th District. Good guy. Go by geocities.com/Steve, the number 4WV. Steve is an excellent writer. He puts his ideas out there very strongly. It's ideas that we can get on board with. And frankly, you know, we build from the ground up. Pyramids are not built from the top down. We build from the ground up. And if you've got some way that you can help Steve, please do so. We'll be back. Your calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2-4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
This is Lee Hamilton.
And Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history.
And we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens.
Staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history.
And it's also our future.
Get involved.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
All right, 20 minutes past the hour, coming up on 21 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. In full swing, if you want to jump in, you got something that we haven't quite hit yet. I've got a stack that I haven't hit yet that's about an inch thick, but, you know, it's conversation, right? 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. And to the phones, Jim. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to share something with you, and this is in reference to your earlier caller, David.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, we had two. Which one?
I believe David was discussing religion and Christianity with you.
Okay, yeah.
There's just something I want to share, and for the sake of clarity and accuracy, and for the sake of time, I would like to use as an aid memoir my prayer book, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and this basically explains my own feelings, and maybe it's what he was trying to say. I don't know. I can speak only for myself.
Sure.
I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and of all things visible and invisible, and in one Lord Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God, begotten of the Father before all worlds, God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten, not made, being of one substance with the Father, by whom all things were made, who for us men and for our salvation came down from heaven, and was incarnate by the Holy Ghost of the Virgin Mary, and was made man, and was crucified also for us under Pontius Pilate. He suffered and was buried, and on the third day he rose according to the Scriptures, and ascended into heaven, and sitteth on the right hand of the Father, and he shall come again with glory to judge both the quick and the dead, whose kingdom shall have no end. I believe in the Holy Ghost, the Lord, the giver of life, who proceeded from the Father and the Son, and who with the Father and the Son together is worshipped and glorified, who spake by the prophets. I believe in one Catholic and Apostolic Church. I acknowledge one baptism for the remission of sins. I look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. Now, that's something that's been with me since I was a boy.
Yeah, that's the Apostolic Creed, is it not?
It is. And it's something that I departed from part of my life, but I've come back to. And it's something I believe with all my heart and every fiber of my being.
Well, and see, the critical thing there, Jim, is you are acknowledging, and it acknowledges, it says, I believe.
As I've said before, belief.
And belief is the critical point.
And faith, and any expression of faith is imbued in that creed, is a leap into the unknown. And that's what faith is.
Yeah, the unknown, the unknowable, the unprovable, the unascertainable, the unquantifiable, certainly.
And you can't hold the air in your hand. There's so many things that are so infinite. And everything we have, this radio station, this earth, this world, but one day pass away, it'll be gone. Everything.
I know. And what do they say? And in four billion years or so, the sun will explode. The earth will be fried to a cinder, and it will be no more.
The way man is going. But what I'm trying to say is this: you know, I do believe that these people, and believe you me, these right-wing Christians and these zealots down in Texas, they do give you grist for your mill, do they not? If it were not for them, you would not have a lot to talk about sometimes. So you got to give them credit for that. But at least, you know, this is just what I believe in my heart.
Well, Wednesday, you know, we kind of, there's so much of this stuff out there, Jim, that we devote Wednesday nights to it because all over this country there are people going to various and sundry little weird fundy churches, and they're doing their gig on Wednesday night, and we're just taking our, you know, we're just trying to take a little bite out of that by talking about the reality.
Well, this creed was written a long time ago, and it's been through an awful lot. And, you know, an awful lot of people have been burned at the stake for it, and people have died for it.
But the other side of that, Jim, is the people who believe that have burned an awful lot of people at the stake for it.
Perhaps.
And have killed for it.
That may be so. This is true. There's no question. For everything that I could say, you could say something to counter it, and I understand that.
That's really not my point. But, I mean, you know, we talk about the 6 million plus Jews and Roma and people of sexual orientations that differed with that of the Reich who were killed during the Holocaust. The fact of the matter is, a bunch of people who believed that thing that you just read killed upwards of 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5 million, mostly women in Europe during the Inquisition.
Well, this credo is from the Protestant Episcopal Church.
I understand that.
But basically, what you're saying is true. And, you know, I recently sent you a copy of the Wannsee Protocol. Did you receive it?
Yes, I did, and I read it. And it's you know, the most terrifying thing about that, Jim, is the cool and orderly way in which they describe their goals in that Wannsee Protocol.
These 14 men were called from their ministries and their commands to a very beautiful home on Grossen am Wannsee. And they sat around a table, just like the directors of IG Farben would at a board meeting, and they decided the fate of 11 million people by the process of transportation and industrial combustion.
Yeah, well, and it is the very heart and soul of what Hannah Arendt speaks to in describing the banality of evil. That document is nothing if not banal.
Well, the banality of evil to describe the destruction of 6 million human beings. But anyway, that's something that I just, you know, in contrast to what you said earlier with your friend David there earlier about the divinity of Christ and things of that nature, we all have different points of view, and this expresses mine. And this was on my mind, and it's something I did want.
Yeah, and it's very interesting you would bring it up, Jim. And one of the things that I find, I was raised in the Southern Baptist Church. Okay, it might come as a surprise. I had never ever even heard that until, as a child, I went to it was a Presbyterian church. And I'll be quite honest with you, when I got to that line about the Holy Catholic Church and everybody's reading it out loud in the Presbyterian Church, I was afraid if I said that word, given my Baptist upbringing, I was afraid that if I professed to be Catholic, that God was going to open up the earth and swallow me whole.
Why? Catholic means universal.
I know, it's little C Catholic, but you have to understand the Catholic hatred that is preached in these fundy churches.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because the Pope is the whore of Babylon.
Oh, dear God.
I know. That's what I say now, too. But that is what is taught in these churches. Catholics are Mary worshipers, and Jews are Christ killers.
Well, you know,
I mean, I can tell you're astonished with it, but it is how it is.
To believe in the communion of saints and the beatification of men who've done good works, and the divinity or the purity of the Holy Virgin, and you know, so many other things, and of course the link with Saint Peter, with the church, because that is in the Bible, and
basically, you know, I believe Christ established the communion with Peter while he was physically present with us on this earth.
I understand that, and I respect your use of the word believe. But what I'm trying to get at is when we talk about these fundies, it's not just grist for the mill, Jim. These people, if you will study the Dominionist movement, you will find that these people are as horrendously, coldly, calculatingly evil as the people who set out the protocols within the Wannsee document.
Are you talking about the Dominican friars?
No. I'm talking about the Dominionists.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. I had a weird...
I'm sorry. Maybe we broke up. The Dominionists, these people, James D. Kennedy of Coral Ridge Ministries, Falwell, Dobson.
Oh, okay. I know you.
And these people literally believe, one of them said that the most ignorant Bible-believing Christian would be better in government than the most intelligent atheist.
Well,
that's where they are. And this young earth guy, you know.
You're going to have all types of people like that that are going to try to, you know, confuse people and to turn them against one another. And this was foretold. It really was. And there would be people who would be basically false prophets and guys who were in it only for the money and the earthly prestige, because there is nothing for them beyond this life except punishment.
Well, one of the things I find interesting that was pointed out by our very good friend Peter is the only time that all these fundies are fond of talking about what the Antichrist is going to be or who it's going to be. The one time that word appears in the Bible, it appears not as in the singular, it appears in the plural, Antichrists. And we, in the forms of fundamentalist religion industry in this country, Jim, we are up to our necks in them, and they are deadly, and they're devilish, and they're murderous and hateful, and they would kill either you or me in a minute if they thought they could get away with it.
Well, you know, Bob, if they wanted to kill me for my faith, I would gladly give up my life.
Well, that is noble.
Give up my life.
That's noble, and the thing is, they would gladly grant you your nobility.
So be it.
And then do awful, awful things.
Well, that's okay. That's fine with me if that's the way they operate. But I mean, and I thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Jim. It's always good talking to you. Thanks for what you bring.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Sometimes we do have to discuss these things. I mean, I know we have our fun and it's shtick and so forth, and we call it prayer meeting. But they are at war with you, whether you realize it or not. I was driving by the church where I was baptized not too long back, and they had something on the bulletin board, a leadership seminar. May 4th and 5th, or some such as that. Leadership seminar at the Baptist Church. Does Jesus need water slides? Does Jesus need leadership seminars? I'm thinking, you know, if you do the whole love thy neighbor as thyself, and the first commandment is love God, if you do all that, you don't need a leadership seminar. Because leadership seminars, at their very base, are cold and calculated. Leadership seminars are classes designed to teach a certain group of people how to manipulate other people. There was nothing in Yeshua's message about manipulating human beings. Or did I just miss it? It's time for our bottom of the hour break. We got a little bit of time left. If you want to jump onto the phone lines, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. What do you think? I'm right here. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Wonder where you are. all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't get tired.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Former President Bill Clinton, along with the country's leading soft drink distributors and the American Heart Association, have worked out a deal that would begin eliminating high-calorie drinks from being sold in public schools. Clinton said during a press conference last week that the nationwide initiative is an effort to combat childhood obesity.
If an 8-year-old child consumes 45 fewer calories a day, every day for a decade, when the child graduates from high school, he or she will weigh 20 pounds less.
The program would only allow natural juices, bottled water, and low-fat milk to be sold in elementary and middle schools. High schools would have an additional choice of sports drinks and diet soda.
In Detroit over the weekend, hundreds of labor activists turned out for the Labor Notes Building Solidarity from Below conference. One participant was Greg Shotwell of the UAW rank and file group Soldiers of Solidarity. He says with the UAW strike vote underway and a decision expected Tuesday from a bankruptcy judge on giving Delphi the power to throw out its union contracts on its own, workers could soon be taking direct action to fight Delphi's attack on middle-class wages and benefits. Shotwell says worker militancy and solidarity are needed, a willingness to go all the way to a strike that destroys the company if the company insists on destroying the livelihoods of workers and their families.
If you go into negotiations waving a white flag, you're going to come out with a white flag. And if I stand to lose everything, what do I care? I'll bring down the whole house of cards. So, we're taking a very militant stance, and I think Miller is taking a very militant stance himself. So we have to respond appropriately to his militancy.
Shotwell says a failure of the UAW to organize more of the U.S. auto industry has contributed to the crisis auto workers face.
A group of 30 labor unions in Denver, Colorado, are opposing that city's bid to host the 2008 Democratic National Convention. Why? A lack of union jobs at the hotels and convention centers in that city. The Denver Area Labor Federation voted unanimously on a resolution that makes their position known. The resolution states, there are too many elected Democrats in Colorado that have not honored their pledge to help workers form unions or protect workers during contract campaigns. Denver is one of seven cities competing to host the convention. Of those seven, Dallas is the only other city without unionized hotels. Here is today's economic report. The average employed mother works 44 hours per week at her paid job and then clocks an additional 49.8 hours per week playing the role of mother. That's according to a recent report by Salary.com. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, 26 million women with children under the age of 18 also have full-time jobs. Salary.com has a website that calculates how much a mother would get paid if being a mother was a paying job. Mothers who also work outside of the house would earn on average playing their mother role $62,798 with $23,078 in overtime.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is for you, Daddy.
I took my love and I took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around and I saw my reflection in the...
Welcome back to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, winding down on this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. About 27 minutes and change before the hour. And there's still time to get your calls in if you want to, but I want to share a couple more things with you. Because I don't just say stuff. And not trying to be ugly or anything. But what I try to bring to this program is not a matter of milling the grist. There is a threat in this nation There is a dire threat in this nation. There is an immediate threat in this nation. And the name of that threat is fundamentalist Christianity. I don't even think of them as Christians, because they profess one thing and they live another. This letter from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, this thing should be printed and just sort of dropped by fundamentalist churches all over the country, because I want to know what their response would be. Because of course they can just write off Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, president of Iran. Ah, he's crazy. He don't love Jesus. He don't love Jesus the way he ought to. Yeah, he says peace be upon him, but you know, he says that about Mohammed, and Dr. Falwell done told us that Mohammed was a child molester. Okay? These are the people you're dealing with. Ahmadinejad, in his letter, asks the following question. Can one be a follower of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, the great messenger of God, feel obliged to respect human rights, present liberalism as a civilization model, announce one's opposition to the proliferation of nuclear weapons and WMDs, make war and terror his slogan, and finally work towards the establishment of a unified international community, a community which Christ and the virtuous of the earth will one day govern, but at the same time have countries attacked, the lives, reputations, and possessions of people destroyed, and on the slight chance of criminals in a village, city, or convoy, for example, the entire village or city or convoy set ablaze. Or because of the possibility of the existence of WMDs in one country, it is occupied, around 100,000 people killed, its water sources, agriculture, and industry destroyed, close to 180,000 foreign troops put on the ground, sanctity of private homes of citizens broken, and the country pushed back perhaps 50 years. At what price? Hundreds of billions of dollars spent from the treasury of one country and certain other countries, and tens of thousands of young men and women as occupation troops put in harm's way, taken away from family and loved ones, their hands stained with the blood of others, subjected to so much psychological pressure that every day some commit suicide, and those returning home suffer depression, become sickly, and grapple with all sorts of ailments, while some are killed and their bodies handed back to their families. On the pretext of the existence of WMDs, this great tragedy came to engulf both the peoples of the occupied and the occupying country. Later, it was revealed that no WMDs existed to begin with. Of course, Saddam was a murderous dictator. But the war was not waged to topple him. The announced goal of the war was to find and destroy weapons of mass destruction. He was toppled along the way towards another goal. Nevertheless, the people of the region are happy about it. I point out that throughout the many years of the war on Iran, Saddam was supported by the West. Mr. President, you might know that I am a teacher. My students ask me, how can these actions be reconciled with the values outlined at the beginning of this letter and duty to the tradition of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, the messenger of peace and forgiveness? There are prisoners in Guantanamo Bay that have not been tried, have no legal representation. Their families cannot see them and are obviously kept in a strange land outside their own country. There is no international monitoring of their conditions and fate. No one knows whether they are prisoners, POWs, accused, or criminals. European investigators have confirmed the existence of secret prisons in Europe, too. I could not correlate the abduction of a person and him or her being kept in secret prisons with the provisions of any judicial system. For that matter, I fail to understand how such actions correspond to the values outlined in the beginning of this letter, i.e. the teachings of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, human rights, and liberal values. And then he goes into his Israel thing, a lot of which is statement of fact. But you heard that. You heard those inquiries. How sad does it make you to realize that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad can sit down and write something like that? And him not a Christian, that points out point by point the non-Christian nature of George W. Bush and not simply want to weep. You know, Mr. Ahmadinejad, for some time now, we've been thinking how one can justify all that crap too. And someone needs to tell Mahmoud Ahmadinejad that George Bush is no more a Christian than he is a Chinese aviator. Boy, that's old and probably racist, and I apologize for it. Make war and terror his slogan. Those are all, everything he put forth there is true. It is a fact. And Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, and Saddam had nothing to do with the reason we invaded. And God, 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 how many are dead now for this murderous, hateful man who desperately needs to be in the dock at The Hague facing a life. You know, it's rather a pity they tore down Spandau prison. That'd be a nice place for George Bush to spend the rest of his days. But they did. Look. Look at the letter. It's at truthout.org. It's easy to find. The BBC has a PDF format of the entire letter. You can read it for yourself. Granted, I'm a professional reader and so forth, but yeah, whatever. Many questions remain unanswered. And Donald Rumsfeld, I don't know if you heard him, I think it was yesterday, saying, you know, we have to be right all the time. You know, we were wrong about the WMD. We were wrong. The evidence was incorrect. But we have to be wrong 100% of the right 100% of the time. Golly, it's tough. Golly, it's tough. Meanwhile, if you are of a mind to just, well, I'm not going to say finish the evening because many of you, like me, will go over to listen to Mike Malloy after this program is over, so your evening probably won't end. And Mike, I'm sure, has something that will be even more unsettling or outrageous. But understanding all of this, understanding the dire threat that organized religion industry fundamentalism presents to this country, understanding Ali Khamenei and George Bush. They believe virtually the same things. And they are equally deadly. The only difference being that Ali Khamenei and Iran haven't invaded anybody lately. You will recall that Saddam started that war with Iran back in the 80s, won't you? Thank you. You'll recall, won't you, that Saddam started that war with Iran back in the 80s with the explicit, complicit, tacit approval and financing of the United States of America and you, if you were a taxpayer even that far back. You will understand all of those things, and you will shiver in your boots at this. President Bush suggested Wednesday that he'd like to see his family's White House legacy continue, perhaps with his younger brother Jeb as the chief executive. The president said Florida Governor Jeb Bush is well suited for another office and would make a great president. I'd like to see Jeb run at some point in time, but I have no idea if that's his intention or not. I have no idea what he's going to do. I've asked him that question myself. I truly don't think he knows. Jeb Bush, 53 years old, will end his second term as governor in January. His brother George ends his second presidential term in January 2009. Neither can seek re-election because of term limits. Oh, who did this story? Oh, yeah, okay. No, doofus. George, term limits, no. George Bush has a constitutional limit. The brothers Bush appeared together Tuesday during the president's visit to the Tampa area. Governor Bush was waiting on the tarmac when Air Force One arrived and greeted the president with a politician's handshake and welcome to Florida. The president brushed aside the formality and playfully adjusted his younger brother's necktie. It's a damn shame they weren't alone. You know, maybe George could have heated up a coat hanger and branded his baby brother like he did the little pledges at Delta Kappa Epsilon at Yale in the 60s. Of course, God knows if you're Jeb Bush and, you know, dear leader's, what, 12 years older than him or something like that? God knows poor Jeb probably had his fair share of swirlies growing up. Hey, Jeb, the only thing worse than a Texas tornado? Oh, God. Even his own father said no one believes him. No, wait, there's more. Even his own father said no one believes him when Jeb says he's not interested in running at some point. Former President George H.W. Bush told CNN's Larry King Live last year that he would like Jeb Bush to run one day and that he would be awfully good as president. And there's something a lot of you may have never seen or have forgotten by now. It was taken away so quick. It disappeared from the radar more quickly than did Ari Fleischer standing at the podium announcing Operation Iraqi Liberation. Yeah, once. But way back in, what was it, September of 2004 at the CON, otherwise known as the Republican National Convention. Ever so briefly, the camera floated over. Panned over, I'm sorry, cameras don't float, they pan. Panned over to a weird little knot of cancerous anti-American people, you know, Republicans. And they had signs that said Jeb 2008. And it was there long enough to burn itself into my brain. And then it was gone. Jeb 2008. It's what they want. Hateful old Poppy Bush, otherwise known to his World War II comrades as Bailout Bush. Will only be happy when people talk of them in terms of being the American Caesars, when they are the Julians for the 21st century, when the word Bush means ruler the same way that Caesar meant ruler and went on to engender phrases like Kaiser and Tsar, the Bushes will be happy. When they have completely destroyed this once great nation, they will be happy. When there is nothing left of the United States of America but a tiny sliver of individuals known as the base, or in Arabic, Al-Qaeda, and the rest of us desperately poor and desperate for whatever scraps the Bushes will throw from their and their cronies' tables. That will be the America that they dream of. When all of the United States is a Katrina, the Bushes will be happy. Maybe it won't be 2008. Maybe he'll be the nominee of the Republican Party for 2012. But I wouldn't rule out 2008. Because then all the, that weird little cancerous knot of people who voted for George, it's, you know, the ones that still like George. Yeah, well, he, you know, Jeb would be better than George. He's like Jesus' baby brother. And the others, the 62% that now hate George's guts, well, you know, some portion of them could say, well, maybe it was Jeb we wanted all along. You watch. I don't like being so closely correct so frequently. But you watch. They aim not to govern, but to rule. And to rule, first you must have subjects, not citizens. Not citizen sovereigns. You must have subjects. And the Bush family, let's see, Bart Kopp calls them the Bush family evil empire. Mike calls them the Bush crime family. I just call them the Bush family because that is evil all by itself. In and amongst these religious freaks, these fundamentalists, La Familia Bush walks at ease and comfort, plotting strategies whereby they can further divide America from itself. You watch Jeb Bush. You watch Jeb Bush. John McCain, you watch Jeb Bush. Because Jeb Bush aims to rule. The show tonight was ably produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Our on-site engineer is Randy Kerbway. Peter Godbold makes all the bits and bytes flow the way they're supposed to. And all of those people, we are extremely grateful. The Head On Radio Network happens every night, 7 days a week, only because of the support of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. In their thousands, every day, they build the American dream. And in supporting the Head On Radio Network, they are trying to save the American dream for another day. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.